many difficulties. Predicting earthquakes depends on understanding, you know, what causes the rupture to break and getting instrumentation that can measure that situation. That's obviously one of the greatest challenges to geology there is. And the other thing we've learned in the show is that if you have a murder mystery that goes back 65 million years involving geology, well, at least the geology allows you to look at the evidence because it's there in the rock. But on the other hand, it's so long ago and it's so subtle, it's very difficult to unravel it. Look at how long we've been spending trying to figure out what did in the dinos.
And the theory that we have now is that a rock hit the earth and there was an enormous earthquake and that accelerated the flow of lava. And so maybe it was a 1-2-3 punch that did in the dinosaurs.
And I think we can thank Thomas Jagger for his contribution because he took a phenomenon, volcanoes, that was just a spectacle, and he turned that into a science.
We want to give Magma Animus thanks to the hot talents who helped produce this show, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky-David and Sammy David. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the episode Caught in a Traps. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, well, you'll find it in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because it was once the hot new thing, or simply because your radio sits next to your lava lamp, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, be sure to throw in some faint praise and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
They sounded like stomping on the ground. It wasn't that loud, but it was from the plant eaters, like they would stomp pretty loud. The more smaller it is, the more it doesn't stomp.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And as with MUFON, this show likes to deal with scientific evidence of the UFO phenomenon, be it direct or circumstantial. However, every scientific discovery begins with a theory. So sometimes it's fair to just say, what if? And let the validity of our speculation speak for itself. Bob Mitchell has done just that in his new book, What If? Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind. Bob is a Canadian author and journalist who covered crime sports for the Toronto Star for more than 35 years. He's the author of 7 books, including 3 UFO books. His UFO books are Incident at Pleasant Ridge, A Canadian UFO Mystery, Intrusion, Alien Encounters, and of course, What If? He is also a field investigator for MUFON based in Ontario, and an executive with MUFON Canada. Bob also continues to be a freelance journalist and media consultant. He has appeared on numerous radio and television programs, including Coast to Coast with George Nouri and Fade to Black with Jimmy Church, and has spoken at numerous conferences. He is also a co-founder of Toronto News Wire Services. So let's welcome Bob Mitchell to the show. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Dave. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on talking to a fellow believer, I think.
A fellow believer. Well, I like to say there are believers, skeptics, debunkers, and witnesses. I am the latter.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm sort of in the latter, too, because all of my books that I've written, basically the last three, deal with people telling me their experience or story. So It's not that I've physically seen these things or witnessed them. It's through their eyes I'm hearing about their extraordinary encounters and what has happened to them. And it's through that that I am able to tell the rest of the world that people who are keeping these things hidden, they're not alone, that there are millions of people just like them out there, and they're not crazy. They actually either believe they've experienced something or have experienced something that really is hard to explain with the rational mind.
Right. Well, I say I'm a witness, so I'm I've witnessed the UFO phenomenon. I've witnessed a UFO. And up close and personal, not just one of those, gee, I saw a light in the sky type deal, but
right.
It's been setting me off at for the rest of my life trying to, I guess, investigate just to make sure that I'm not crazy, my family's not crazy.
You're quite normal in that respect. Because, and I think you're also fit into the category of an experiencer, because experiencer doesn't necessarily mean abduction. It means an encounter, something that you know absolutely happened, and nobody's going to tell you otherwise.
So, that's right.
I know where you're coming from, and I know what you mean when you say that you're a witness.
Yeah, I know what I saw, and like the movie, I know what I saw.
And forget what anybody else thinks.
That's it. They can believe it. They don't have to. Don't care.
Yeah.
So tell me, what first piqued your interest in, you're a journalist, so what piqued your interest in the UFO phenomenon?
Yeah, you know, I've always been fascinated by UFOs. And when I decided it was time to leave my professional career and take a buyout, I fully intended to be a freelance writer, probably a freelance sports writer, because at the time I was covering the Maple Leafs of the NHL and the Argos of the CFL. So I thought, you know, I'd continue on a freelance basis and find work that way. But one of the things I wanted to do is I thought it'd be interesting to write a story about a local UFO investigator in the town I'm now living in, which is Brantford, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't know really where to contact that person, because it's not something, you know, you look up in the Yellow Pages or and a lot of people certainly want to keep that part of their life hidden. It's not something you put on a resume. So I contacted MUFON and said, listen, do you have an investigator in Southern Ontario? And they put me in touch with a man named Stu Bundy, who was at the time the Ontario director of MUFON. And he basically was it. But he wasn't living in Brantford, so it didn't really fit the story that I wanted to do. And so we ended up having lunch, and one thing led to another. And before I knew it, I ended up becoming the person that I wanted to interview. So I became a field investigator.
Right.
Went to the MUFON convention in New Jersey, Cherry Hill, New Jersey that year with Stu. Met a lot of people, and my interest was piqued, but I soon found out that I really wasn't interested, as you say, investigating lights in the sky.
Right.
That just seemed to be, it wasn't really what I wanted. I wanted to find somebody who had experienced something that that no one had ever talked about before. And while I'm still a field investigator per se with MUFON, I really haven't done anything for the last 2 years, and I'm sort of, I don't know what the word is, in abeyance, I guess. But I'm still connected with MUFON Canada because we have our local meetings up here. Mm-hmm. But basically, the rest of the time has been spent, you know, talking with people who had experiences. And where that started was Stu and I decided we were going to have a meeting in Brantford to see if there was any interest in starting a local chapter. And we found a coffee shop that we could get for free that night. And we really expected maybe 10 people to show up. And lo and behold, we had 75 people show up at that first meeting. They were going out the door. They were absolutely fascinated by what we were talking about. And soon afterwards, people started contacting me with stories, and they really wanted to unburden themselves with things that had happened to them, and they felt I would be a person that would listen to them and not ridicule them. And that led me on a path where 3 books later, I'm still talking with people who have had incredible experiences, and I'm not judging them. I'm letting them tell their story. Mm-hmm. And it's been an amazing journey for me, but even more amazing journey for them, because every single person that I've talked to has told me afterwards that they felt a tremendous relief, a tremendous burden that had been lifted off their shoulders, and their personality actually completely changed. They became extrovert, in fact, and willing to talk about this. So,
just by talking to you, right?
Just by talking to me, and because most of the people that I found that were talking to me were in between the ages of late 40s to early 60s.
Right.
And they had these experiences from childhood, and they had kept these experiences hidden away to only their really close friends, but sometimes even their family members never knew about it, because
right.
the minute they talked about it, they were labeled crazy and, they, right. you know, don't talk about such things. And so there really wasn't anybody to talk to. And finally, they talked to me, and the floodgates just opened, emotionally and mentally.
Yeah, that's what MUFON is all about. You know, it's just somebody to talk to that's not going to ridicule you. And you know, that's basically what MUFON is, you know, tell your story, and you have people who will commiserate with you, and, you know, they're not going to solve your problem, you know, if you're an abductee.
Yeah.
They're not
that's,
going
to... That's funny, because a couple of people wanted me to make them stop.
Yeah.
They said, can you make them go away? And I said, well, listen, I can't. And, you know, MUFON does their job a lot. They investigate people's sightings and all that stuff. But even when it comes to experiencers telling their story, it's more of a, you know, an academic process rather than a human one-to-one process. And that's why I think I've been successful getting people to really open up to me, because it's not something they have to put on a piece of paper. They're physically talking to me, and I'm listening to them.
Right.
And one of the interesting stories in my book, Intrusion, Alien Encounters, involved a woman who is totally deaf. I mean, she is, when I first met her, I mean, I couldn't understand a word she was saying because she spoke, you know, sign language. And when she talked, it was hard to understand what she had to say to me. But I agreed to meet her, and she ended up having a friend who is a son and a daughter who knew sign language, and so we originally communicated that way. And she told me all about the experience she has from a child, and the incredible thing about her is that by the time we finished our many series of interviews, she became a different person. She was now an extrovert. She could talk to me with her mouth, basically, and I could understand what she was saying. And today she comes out to all our meetings and stands up in front of people and tells her story. And it's just been an incredible transformation.
Yeah.
You have to think about this. She lived an entire world of silence all her life. And I don't even know if there's a sign language for alien or UFO. So how was she able to even come out to anybody? So this was a world that she had kept secret, and when she found me, we just it just changed her life.
Oh, yeah.
It's changed the life of, I can say, everybody who's talking to me.
They can communicate. And, you know, I don't know if this is alien technology or just human technology, but they have come out now with these, their gloves. You put these gloves on, you may have heard of this.
I think I did.
Yeah, connected to a speaker, a computer.
Yeah, I think I saw something about that on the story.
Whoa.
6 months ago.
And people sign, and it translates it into the spoken word.
Yeah.
So,
well, didn't I see something recently where they said they can do that with animals now, too?
With animals. I don't know about that.
I thought I saw something that they can... They have some device when the animal barks or something, it translates into something. I mean, I don't know how they know that, but...
That I haven't heard.
Like that. I'd love to have that spot.
That I haven't heard. Now, I will believe the signing, you know, I've seen the demonstration of it, but I don't know if we can find out what Fido's saying or not his bark, you know.
But I searched the internet when I was doing that book, Intrusion, and I couldn't find a single other hearing challenged or deaf person that had ever talked about having a UFO or alien experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to assume there are.
Oh, yeah.
Marianne Anderson is the lady, and I believe she's the first person to ever come out. And she hopes other deaf people will come out to tell their story.
But, well, that's the thing. You know, people try to put a label on those who claim abduction experiences. But, you know, it just happens to Bubba out on the hills. Well, it happens to every race, color, creed across the world.
Millions of people say they've been abducted, and also millions. I mean, I don't think millions of people, but there has been so many, you know, whistleblowers and high-ranking people, government officials, pilots, astronauts, physicists, you name it. They've come out saying they've seen something or have an experience. So nobody is saying they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Laura Eisenhower, who has really taken a stand about what's going on. I mean, great-granddaughter of Dwight. So
right.
She's not going to come out if, you know, nobody's saying she's crazy. So I think a lot of people have very closed minds, but more and more, I think it's becoming almost, without disclosure officially, it's becoming something that people are now thinking that it's absolutely true, that we have not only been visited by alien species for probably thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, that the governments know and are working with them.
Yeah, yeah. I've often said on this show, with all the officials that are coming forward as whistleblowers, would an American president or any president make it more official if he or she came out and said this?
Well, it would be validation of things that a lot of people always believe.
Right.
But I mean, there was a lot of talk that Hillary was going to become the disclosure president. And I had even people tell me that she was going to do it, you know, during the campaign. But I really thought that was kind of far-fetched, because even though she sort of hinted it, can you imagine if Hillary came out and said aliens exist and I'm going to get into it, that Donald Trump would just have a complete field day on that?
Everybody would have a field day on it.
Yeah, so you know? Even if she was telling the absolute truth, it would be political suicide, I think, until she gets into the White House.
Well, that's the thing. Just with like with scientists, it's a professional suicide.
Yeah,
to come out
absolutely.
And say, now, Levengood, Lefty Levengood, W.C. Levengood, you may know of him, biophysicist. He's passed now, but his work in crop circles and cattle mutilations, what he called bovine incisions, which is more is really more correct than mutilations. But at any rate, he accepted the fact that UFOs are real. He just could not come out. He was getting government grants.
Everybody is.
And then,
if you look at it, it's hard to look at things with a rational mind, but
right.
But at the same time, the cattle mutilations are something that's real.
Right.
So, and they're not done by animals. They're not done by birds.
Satanic rituals.
Yeah, I mean, there was a story out of Canada last summer that was, to me, was so outlandish and completely ridiculous. There was a farm in Alberta where they found these cows, and the RCMP came there, and for the American listeners, that's like, national police, so let's call it the FBI, basically.
Right.
They go out to the farm to investigate it, and their conclusion was that the cows had eaten something poisonous and they exploded from within. and that's the story, it's so ridiculous to even think that.
Okay, did they find the organs that were missing?
I don't think so. The story died pretty soon after that. But I mean, it's people just have to wake up and know what's truth and what isn't truth.
Well, some of these explanations that the officials give are more ridiculous than the thought of alien visitation to begin with.
Oh, yeah. Remember the swamp gas? Everything was swamp gas.
Oh, yeah. We just had the swamp gas conference here in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where it was. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And how many times are you told that, you just saw a planet Jupiter or Venus?
Oh, my.
These are trained pilots.
Yeah.
I would hope they would know the difference between Jupiter and a plane coming at you.
Oh, it's scary to think that they didn't.
I know. And that'd be more scary, right?
Right.
Average person just sort of accepts, I know. These things can't possibly exist. They think the world they live in really is the world they live in. And that's why I wrote the book, What If? Because I posed the question, what if the world we think we live in really isn't the world we live in?
Really.
And based on the stories in the book, you'd have to conclude that we don't live in the world we think we live in.
Right. I need to take one moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. It's 89.3 FM on your radio and WHFR.FM on your computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with a former journalist and researcher, author, Mr. Bob Mitchell. So this is the Mitchell and Twitchell show, Twitchell and Mitchell.
Twitchell and Twitchell, yeah.
Yeah, we'll give you.
I actually had an insurance agent named Dave Twitchell once.
Did you?
Yeah, at first, when I got your email, I thought it might be him at first, and then I thought, no.
No, he's just trying to sell me insurance, that's all.
Yeah, I know.
Let's talk about your book. Was this your first incident at Pleasure Ridge?
Well, Pleasant Ridge came out of that first meeting because, I had heard of Roswell. I'm not even sure if I even had heard of Rendlesham Forest at the time I started doing this stuff. But I had heard of Betty and Barney Hill and Travis Walton for sure. But and some of the other more cases. But at this meeting, all the old timers started talking about the famous case that happened in Brantford, and I didn't know anything about it. And before I, by the time I was do you hear that? I think somebody's trying to get through to me, but I'll have to ignore the button. But by the time they were finished, I had this whole interesting story about a tobacco farmer who saw a craft land on his field, and it involved men in black. It involved telepathy, mind control, material that was taken and suddenly disappeared by the Ontario Provincial Police and the forensic labs in Toronto that suddenly said they had no such information, even though a local Crown attorney picked up some samples and took this icky gooey liquid that the spacecraft had landed on for examination. And then, I found that there was very little evidence of anything, even though the police were involved and there was a couple of stories in the newspaper and some other UFO investigators were involved. The Canadian archives and our version of the RCMP, they have absolutely no record of this event ever happening. Yet it was very famous at the time, and there were law authorities involved. And one of the famous Canadian ufologists at the time, I guess he was the first to even have a college course in ufology in Canada. His name was Henry McKay. He tried for over 10 years to get information from every single government agency around and was stymied all the time. And in fact, his last communication was from the Prime Minister's office saying that they couldn't reveal anything because it was still a matter of investigation. So, but nobody officially would say it ever happened.
Okay, but, so that's kind of contradictory if they say, no, it didn't happen, but on the other hand, it's still under investigation.
I know.
What's under investigation?
Very crazy. So the thing I wrote that a very happen. Small book on it, but it got me started on this journey that I've been on. And you mentioned the three books I've written. I just co-wrote a book with a man named Jason Quitt, who in our book, that book is called Forbidden Knowledge, Revelations of a Multidimensional Time Traveler. And since March, it's been number one on Amazon's UFO book. So that's a whole other topic. But
Tell us a little bit
about... to a lot of different theories on what abductions are. From the What If book, the very first story in that book has really changed the way I look at abductions right now. And I have a theory that... seems to be gaining some ground. If we have some time, I'd love to tell your listeners.
Yeah, I want to get into that, but I wanted to cover first, let's go back to the incident at
sure.
Pleasant Ridge. I keep saying...
Pleasant Ridge, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, that ridge over there. when did this happen?
This happened in 1975 in the summer. Coincidentally, it happened about 4 or 5 months before Travis Walton was abducted.
Okay.
So, and in 75, there was all over the world, there was a flaps of UFO sightings, and I'm not so sure about abductions, but everybody was seeing UFOs that year. So something was definitely happening that year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when Joe saw this shiny object in his... tobacco field, it immediately thought that it was a UFO, and when he went to move towards it, suddenly a thought came into his mind that said, there's nothing there, don't worry, just go back and do your own business,
mm-hmm.
and he did, and he never even gave it another thought. He actually went swimming that afternoon, and it wasn't until 2 days later that when he was out on the field, he saw what I won't say was a crop circle, but it was a very circular 20-foot-wide patch of burnt tobacco crops with this gooey, purplish liquid in it.
Hmm.
And, you know, his brother at the time was the crown attorney for the area, which is equivalent to the district attorney. And, you know, they came out and they took samples, and they called the police, and they took samples. But the interesting thing is, before he even reported it to people, people were showing up at his farm, claiming to be, officials from the U.S. government and the army, and he hadn't reported it to anybody.
Yeah, he
had. He even had three men from Buffalo, New York, that claimed to be ufologists, that said they heard it on the radio and they wanted to immediately come up and look at it, and he hadn't even talked to any newspaper yet, so. It was very strange, and every time he went to say something, something in his mind told him that there's nothing there. So it was a very strange occurrence. At one point, one of his neighbors told me that he went over and saw these people of U.S. Army, military people in hazmat suits all over the area, and they really told him to get lost, basically, and he questioned them, and he said that they were members of Project Blue Book. Well, Project Blue Book was already closed by 6 years by the time this happened.
Oh, yeah.
So that obviously was a cover story. And the Men in Black thing, Joe actually saw a limousine pull onto his property before he even told his brother about it, and it was a black limousine with Arizona license plates.
Mm-hmm.
And that was strange in itself, because there's no way they would drive all the way from Arizona to Ontario.
No.
In the time. And of course, when he went out to question them, in his mind again was told, you know, there's nothing here, don't worry, just go about your business and leave us alone. And he did that. It was like something had controlled his mind.
That is very, very common. In fact, that happened with me. It happened with my family when we had our sighting. Afterward, we just turned around, walked into the house, and went to bed.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that strange that so many people have had the exact same thing happen to them? And that's one way of telling you that this is not a made-up thing.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, one person said it, but many people have had the exact same feeling. So
that
shows you that there's a mind control.
Yeah. And the skeptic,
whatever is going on, it's mind control too.
The skeptic would say, after such a sighting like that, why would you just go about your business? And my reply would be, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, that is the most amazing thing about it. And exactly what Joe said, you know, that he doesn't know why he didn't get excited, didn't go out and even investigate it further.
Right.
It made absolutely no sense to him or anybody else.
Right.
And that's the way I find a lot of these things are.
Describe this goo that we're talking about.
Well, it was a purplish, oily type substance.
Mm.
And I know several samples were taken. Mm. And his brother, who was the Crown Attorney, physically put some in mason jars and drove them down physically to the Ontario Center for Forensic Sciences in Toronto, which is an hour away, and handed them in, and yet when he called a few days later to see if they knew what it was, they had no record of him ever handing anything in.
Mm-hmm.
And being a Crown Attorney, he was really upset about it and tried to get to the bottom of it and couldn't get anybody.
No, he wouldn't.
Ever. And at one point, the explanation was for the burnt that it was a lightning strike.
Mm.
But that didn't hold much water to the actual farmers who had seen lightning strikes.
Right, in a perfect circle, huh?
Yeah, and there were three little small indents, too. So, you know, something landed there, and, you know, was it a military experimental aircraft? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't a truck spraying the crops as was implanted in his mind at the time.
Wow.
Because he didn't order any truck to spray crops that day.
Right.
And there was no, you know, tire tracks leading up to it and no footprints leading up to it in the fields. So
a lot of people like to think that it's our government /governments. Here you're talking about Canada. Well,
yeah.
Same thing goes on here in the United States. Our government's doing this. Our governments must be pretty intelligent and have some highly sophisticated technologies. You know,
and where do they get the technology
from? Yeah, where do they get them? Right. Oh, we're just that smart, Bob. We're just smart.
Very smart. We're all Einstein.
Really, beyond Einstein's. Yeah. I don't think, I've said it before, I don't think that we humans are ever going to wrap our heads around the actual truth or the technologies and the laws of physics that goes.
Well, I think I have.
You think so?
In my explanation for what's really going on, what I've come to, and And it's based on the first story that in my book, What If, that I came with this conclusion and then talking to other people.
Okay. We're going to talk about that, but first I want to ask you about this. You sent me an email pertaining to, the hearing on ET disclosures Saturday, June 25th. Tell us about that.
Tell you, but I actually just sent out another one. I don't know if you got it or not.
I may have.
Yeah, international panel to probe extraterrestrial existence. That was the heading on that one.
Yeah, I think I did get that one. It's pretty much the same thing, though, isn't it?
So what was that?
It's the same thing. It's the hearing.
We just expanded on it and give a little update about what's going on. But it's a very exciting thing that we're going to do. The Alien Cosmic Expo is held in Brantford, and this is the second year. And this year, I'm not only a guest speaker, but I'm also one of the organizers of the event.
Okay.
And it goes from June 24th to the 26th, which is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And on the Saturday, what we're going to do is that we're having extraterrestrial hearing involving seven of some of the really top people in ufology researchers. Richard Dolan's going to be there, Stanton Friedman, Nick Pope, who else? Stephen Bassett will be there, Grant Cameron, and we're also going to have Travis Walton, which is going to be very interesting, because on the Friday night he's going to be showing his documentary, and he's going to be the guest speaker at the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the Saturday he's going to be the experiencer on the panel. And what we want is we're still in the process of seeking mainstream journalists. We really don't want to have journalists on the panel who are into the phenomenon that, you know, are connected with magazines or websites that are already believers. We want, you know, true mainstream journalists to sit on the panel and ask tough probing questions for 90 minutes of these experts on why they think, you know, aliens exist and what they know about the governments and what the governments are hiding. And hopefully at the end of the day that this will be, you know, covered across North America, and if not the international, on a widespread basis in the mainstream press. Because as you know, the mainstream press really never covers UFOs unless it's done in a funny way.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that I've been told that whenever a mainstream newspaper, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, Detroit News, in fact, or Toronto Star, or Toronto Sun, has a story about UFOs in it, it becomes immediately the most read story of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems quite ridiculous that mainstream, you know, journalists, which I was a part of for all my life, really never takes this seriously. And we hope by having this hearing that they will start taking it serious.
Well, this sounds like...
it's not a funny event. It's going to be a very serious event that we hope people will gravitate to.
It sounds like the Disclosure Project we had here in America.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like the Washington hearing, because that was in front of a fake congressional panel of retired congressionalists, and it went over, you know, several days. This is it's actually a major TV type thing if you want to think about it. 90 minutes of grilling, and you know, the experts will start off by, you know, giving their take on what they think is going on from their expertise. And you know, the interesting thing is, since we announced this was happening, most of the comments have been very positive, saying it's about time and all that stuff. But we have been getting some negative comments from people saying, oh, nothing's going to change. You know, these are just people that have their own theories that aren't based on fact, and it's going to be a joke. But I don't know what these people expect us to do. I mean, we're trying our best to bring this to, you know, the light, to the mainstream journals. And we're actually telling mainstream journalists, you know, this is your opportunity.
Right.
To really
grill us.
Have a chance to grill people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not telling them what to write. They may come about saying that everybody's are complete lunatics, but we're hoping that they will at least have an open mind and, you know, come forward. I have to admit, we are having some trouble getting mainstream journalists to commit to this yet. We have a few. We don't have as many as we want. And I have sent invitations to CNN, Fox, and all the major networks, and have not had a single reply back from anybody. So.
Mm-hmm. They don't. It's the third rail of journalism, and the third rail of politics. You know, but what can I say? I have to take one more moment to remind our listeners: you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Bob Mitchell. Bob Mitchell, author and journalist, and is going to have a thing there in Canada similar to our Disclosure Project or mock hearings, congressional hearings, on the UFO subject on June 25th. And where can our listeners go to find out more about that?
Well, if you go to www.aliencosmicexpo.com, you'll find out about it on there. If you go to one of my websites, which is Bob Mitchell author.wordpress.com, you'll find some links to it, a new magazine website called earthmysterynews.com has a story on it right now. On my Facebook, Bob Mitchell Writer, you'll see stuff on it there too.
Bob Mitchell Writer?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of writing, your latest one was What If? We've been toying with that all during the show. Let's get to that. Tell us about your book, What If?
Yeah. How much time do we have, by the way?
20 minutes or maybe a little less.
Because I really think it's important. I'll tell you the first story in the book, and then I'll tell you what I believe is happening about abduction.
Please.
So I have to skim the first story because I can't tell you it all in the time we have allowed yet. Mm-hmm. But there's a man named Satya Anand, and that's his real name that was given to him by a Tibetan monk. He has a normal name that people would know him as, and he's actually a two-time Emmy-winning daytime producer for shows in the United States. He's a Canadian born in Montreal, but at the time we were doing this book, he was trying to land a big multi-million dollar contract for a project, and he wasn't sure if the people giving the money would have been too receptive if they found out that he had this kind of experience. So he agreed to use his real Tibetan name, but the story is absolutely real. He was always into meditation growing up and had really believed in past life experiences, reincarnation. And he spent about 29 years in Tibet off and on and studied under the enlightened master and really was really a master of meditation. During his meditation studies, he also became very adept at astral traveling, out-of-body experiences. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I don't believe any of this stuff, but it's quite more common than people will want to believe or even think they know. Many people are able to travel out of their bodies on their own without even being just something that just happens. They can control it. And it's always the same, basically, for a lot of people. They leave their body and they suddenly see 360 degrees around them. There is no physical sensation, but it's a consciousness, basically. And so Satya was able to do this quite all the time. But one day he had come home with some friends and to his Toronto condominium. They were going on the balcony to have, some drinks later on, and he just wanted to have a short meditated nap. And what happened was he laid down for a few seconds in the bedroom, and suddenly he felt himself being involved in an out-of-body experience. But it was unlike other out-of-body experience. This time, he felt as if he was being shot out of a cannon, and before he knew it, he found himself in outer space. And he could see the Earth going by. He could see all the planets going by, and it was an incredible experience because he knew he was going faster than ever, and yet he looked down at himself, and he was still in a physical form. He was wearing the same Dockers that he had when he, dozed off on the bed. He had the same shoes. He could touch his face. It was him in a physical form. It wasn't just his consciousness, and that was really strange to begin with, if anything. And you also have to remember at this time he wasn't into aliens at all. He knew something about the Greys, but that was about it. It wasn't part of his life. So he's flying through this outer space, and suddenly he ends up in deep space, and it's blackness. Instead of being stars, there's just nothing there. And as he's there, suddenly he feels that there's this piercing presence staring at him. He describes it to me as if you're at a stoplight, and you suddenly look over to the left, and there's been somebody staring at you, but they quickly turn their head away. It was that kind of feeling. But it was very powerful. Mm. And before he could even think of anything, suddenly this massive creature was in front of him, floating right in front of his eyes. And by massive, I mean this was a 30-foot-tall insectoid-type being. The head was about 5 to 6 feet tall alone, big giant eyes. He described the arms as being almost mechanical. And normally, if that would happen to all of us, we'd probably be scared out of our wits, frightened and terrified.
Really?
But before he could have these feelings, an overwhelming feeling of love engulfed him. He described it as a feeling that he had never experienced before.
Mm.
And he started having a telepathic communication with this creature. And he had this sense that they had met before somehow. So he asked this creature telepathically, do we know each other? And the answer was yes. And that astounded him. He asked him how, and the creature communicated him that in a past life. And he said, as me, the human being, or as your species? And the answer he got back was as that species of an insectoid. And that really freaked him out even more.
Really?
And then he asked, will we be together again? And the species said yes. And again he asked, as my form as human or as your form? And the creature said, in its form. And so that was a wow moment for him, because he had never, ever occurred to him before that reincarnation took place anywhere else but on Earth. He assumed and knew they had past lives, that he might have even been an animal or a plant before. But now suddenly he had this experience that told him that we were all one with the universe, and that when we reincarnate, we not only can reincarnate as a human, but we can reincarnate as an alien species.
Hmm.
And particularly a species that he had never even heard of before. So it wasn't something that was in his conscious mind. It was only when he came out of this and went back and looked on the internet that he actually found what he was looking at. And it was what we know today as a mantid being.
Right.
And from talking with other experiencers, every single other experiencer that I have talked to have had an experience with a mantid being has had the absolute same feeling of overwhelming love, that there's a past connection somehow.
Mm.
And so this has led me to a theory that abductions, which we think are happening in a physical state, I think the majority of them are actually happening in this conscious state of a fourth dimensional existence.
Right.
We live in a third dimension. How many experiencers who have claimed they have been abducted says they have gone somewhere, yet their spouse or their children insist that they haven't gone anywhere? Mm-hmm. They never left the bed that night, that they were there the whole time, and they may have, spouse may have gotten up and got into the washroom and got a drink of water, but his wife or husband was still in the bed. But
right.
Yet they say absolutely they've been somewhere. So what I think is actually happening is that the species that is able to communicate this way is actually able to communicate on a conscious level, that they, your consciousness is moving through dimensions to wherever they're going, that the experiments that are being done are actually done in the consciousness. So the mind actually is what feels pain, not the physical body. So if your consciousness is there somewhere and you are being experimented on, the pain is real, but it's in your consciousness. It's not being done to you physically. And so many people that I have talked to that have had these experiences, when I ask them, do you remember seeing your physical body? I would say 90% of them have told me that when they think about it, they're only seeing it through their eyes. Mm-hmm. They're not seeing a physical body. They're seeing an alien species, and they have a sense that they're viewing them through eyes, but they're not. They're viewing them through their consciousness.
Right.
So I believe that, you know, most of the experiences are being done that way, and explains why people say they've never left the room. Now, there are cases where there are some physical experiences, and it seems clear to me that a lot of these physical experiences, people also say that they see military personnel around near the alien.
Yeah.
So to me, that also means that perhaps the military is also involved in some kind of deal-making with the aliens, and that these physical experiences are actually being done maybe by our own military.
Right, but how would that account if it's all spiritual or, you know, other dimensions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's all spiritual, but I think the vast majority are. And the reason a lot of people, some people have actually told me that when they're undergoing these horrific experiments or any encounter, they are told to relax because they've agreed to this.
Right, I've heard that.
And what that means to me is that in a past life, they may have been an alien, and they are actually now being taken by their celestial family, and that the experiments aren't really experiments in the sense that we think they're doing harm. They're actually doing things to see how they're coping in a human body.
You say
they're so far advanced.
You say alien, but
why would they agree? It makes no sense you'd agree to have something like this.
Yeah, you say alien, but wouldn't it be more apropos to say they were other dimensional? And
mean, I use the term alien as sort of generic because I think people more and more are realizing that there are physical aliens, but there probably are hundreds different kind of interdimensional beings.
Right.
And some of these interdimensional beings are able to have physical third dimensional experiences too.
Right.
We as human beings just can't do that because, again, a lot of experience say that they have recollections of being floated up through the ceiling and into the space or through their walls, and you know, humans can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And unless there is such a thing as a portal, but it makes a lot more sense that if you're doing an out-of-body experience, you can do that.
Right, right.
And in out-of-body experiences, people always talk about seeing a portal, too. So I just think that this is what is happening. And a lot of people seem to be agreeing with me right now that there's something more to this than meets the eye.
Right. It's not all just physical. It's not all just other dimensional. But it's a combination of everything
combination
put together.
And what we think are horrific metal experiments may not be that. But
right.
It's easy to see why you think it, because it would be a very shocking thing to happen to you.
Right. But when it comes to something like Travis Walton experience, now we're talking about a physical nuts and bolts.
Yeah, we're definitely talking about a physical for him. He has come to the conclusion over the years that they actually were trying to help save his life.
Right, right.
It wasn't, a malevolent experience as he originally thought. And it's quite understandable. If you're suddenly in a spaceship and you're looking around and seeing these strange beings, you're going to be very scared and not know what was going on.
Right.
So it's interesting he's changed his feelings about this.
Right. Now, Paul Hellyer is going to be at this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's the conference. Other one I forgot to say. He's going to be on the panel as well.
Yeah, he's a former Canadian Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Defense.
And he's still the highest-ranking former government official in the world, I believe,
right,
to come out to admit that not only are aliens real, but that governments know they're real and have hidden this from the public, and that our world basically is controlled by an elite group of people that some people call the Illuminati or some people just call shadow government.
But, right.
And that everything has been manipulated, including our banking system and just everything.
Hmm.
And he has come out, and he's very passionate about it. And when he talks, people listen.
Now, every one of these people that you've mentioned, except for Paul Hellyer, I have had on this show. Nick Pope, only for a couple minutes. But he was touting a movie.
They all come from different areas.
Yeah.
They all have something, and they're all very well known. So,
Do me a favor, will you? When you get a hold of Mr. Hellyer, give him my contact information. I would love to have him on the show.
Oh, I will, absolutely. I mean, a lot. I know he's getting up there in age. He's, I believe he's just turned 90, I think.
90.
So I think it's 90 right now. So he still does shows. He still comes to places.
Yeah.
So he's still very active.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he would be delighted to talk to you.
That's the kind of person that the skeptic likes to say, oh, well, he's 90 years old. What do you expect? Yeah. You know, he's old. Except, you know, it's like with Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Yeah.
I had him on the show. He's an old man. He's passed now. I was fortunate enough to have him on the show. But the point is, he may be old. He may have been old at the time that he's claiming, this is real. But he'd been claiming it for many years. You know, what about back
Absolutely.
Then?
Absolutely. And Paul just didn't start doing this. He's been doing it for a decade, too.
Right,
so.
Right. And then there's people who have the audacity to say something about American hero like Edgar Mitchell. Like, well, when you go, it's been proven. I love it when they say it's been proven. It's been proven that when you go out into space, it messes up your mind. What?
Yeah. I mean, then everybody's messed up. All the astronauts are messed up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's great, you know. And you know, it's almost ridiculous to think this, but Paul Hellyer, when he talks, he gets more positive press from everywhere else in the world but the United States and Canada.
Really?
I mean, like, international press and countries, they take him seriously. You know, the mainstream press here in North America thinks he's just like, this, you know, fuddy-duddy.
Well,
it's just such a controlled environment here.
Right.
That we're made to think that things are the way they are.
Right.
And I think, you know.
The thing is, other countries like France and Colombia, Mexico, they've pretty much come out and said, you know, this is true. They accept this more than
Mexico
America.
And, you know, Bolivia, Ecuador, Peru, I mean, it's just it's a fact of life.
Right. And it hasn't, you know, people haven't panicked over there, you know? So,
here they don't even want to tell you that that giant skeletons have been found all over the planet and here in the United States. You know, they just don't want you to know that.
There's many things they don't want you to know. Forbidden archaeology, etc.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, people who think that, you know, mankind just has only existed for 5,000 years.
Right.
Because pyramids are way older than that, and some of the stuff they found in carvings on walls have been dated, you know, 200,000 years. So
right.
They just don't. it's a narrative that they can't explain, but so they don't explain it.
I'm afraid we're running short on time, but Bob Mitchell, where can our listeners go to find out more about your writings and your work?
Okay. Amazon.com has all my books. There's a couple of Bob Mitchells out there, but so the books that you're looking for are called Forbidden Knowledge, Revelations of a Multidimensional Time Traveler, What If, Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind, Intrusion, Alien Encounters, and Incident at Pleasant Ridge, a Canadian UFO mystery. My website is bobmitchellauthor.simplesite.com. So you'll find all the books, and there's a link to Amazon there. And email is bobmitchellwriter@gmail.com. So always interested in stories. To let your listeners that there's a new book that's going to probably be coming out by Christmas, hopefully, that is going to blow the socks off everything I've written before.
Bob Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us. You have a good
My
one.
My pleasure.
Bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.fm, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky. You're listening to WHFR. Dearborn. Yo, guys and dolls out there, you're at the malt shop with Daddy G again. Here on WHFR, and we're going back to the 50s and the 60s, and we're rocking out, so put hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.